Welcome to the Coffee Cast with Stephen Hayward of Project X. Hopefully over a good cup of coffee, we're going to have a great conversation. So please join us to welcome this week's guest on the Coffee Cast. Welcome to this week's episode of the Coffee Cast with Steve Hayward of Project X. I have with me today the illustrious Graham Boundy. Welcome, Graham.
Hello, Stephen.
So we were just chatting about how Graham can turn a pleasure trip in France to a working trip and having a side trip to Synopsis or one of the Teradata customers in France.
All I have to do is take a ride on the TGV and talk business with somebody who's driving the train.
From place to place. There you go. So, welcome back. Today, we're going to talk about a myriad of things that are kind of wandering through our heads and see where the conversation goes, just to try and get back on the horse that's the Coffee Cast. So, hope you have a good cup of coffee. Graham certainly does. I'm kind of coffeeed out, but by the time this gets published, I'll be having a coffee in my hand.
It's actually tea.
Of course, it's tea.
Okay.
All right, anyway. So a couple of things that were topical that might be kind of fun to talk about. One was you wanted to talk about the floor sweep mentality.
Well, we were getting around to thinking about adding more nodes to a configuration.
Teradata nodes.
Teradata nodes.
So in other words, adding more hardware to an existing instance of an environment.
And one of the challenges associated with that is we put a bunch of nodes into things called cliques. And cliques are relatively easy to put together, but once they're loaded with data, and once that data is distributed across all the nodes in the clique, it's a fairly painful process to break that clique up. So in past conversations with people, we've been talking about what's the optimum size for a clique. And what it comes down to is you can have up to 8 nodes in a clique. And the significance of a clique is if one of those nodes goes down, then you lose that percentage of performance in the clique.
But not the data.
But not the data, because the other nodes take over for the node that's failed.
Yep.
So for instance, if you had a 2-node clique and one of your nodes goes down, you take a 50% hit in CPU and memory performance. And because that CPU now has to do the work of two nodes. So if you have a 3-node clique, it's a 33% hit in performance. If one goes down, a 4-node clique, a 25% hit in performance. 5-node clique, 12.5% performance hit, and so on. And so that's fine. I mean, you can build up to a 8-node clique, which means that, you know, you take a whatever that percentage is in performance, which is minuscule by the time you get to having 8 nodes in a clique, and you wouldn't even notice that the node went down. The problem happens when you've got in that 8-node clique, you've probably got about 8 terabytes of physical user space.
Mm-hmm.
It's really about 11 terabytes of disk space once you've taken spool into account. And guess what? That works out to be 22 terabytes of space when you think about RAID and everything else like that. So it's a significant amount of disk. It's a significant amount of hardware. And then when all of this hardware starts to come to end of life, what do you do with it? Now I have to think about replacing the entire clique because it's hard to separate that thing out.
And it's, you know, version to version may not be connectable. I mean, I know you got Binet and you got all sorts of things.
See, that's the other thing about cliques and the Teradata architecture is there is no such thing as a heterogeneous clique. You can only have a homogeneous clique, which means the type of node you have in that clique is has to be consistent.
Same version of software, same version of hardware?
Same version of hardware, and I believe same version of software. Yeah, I mean, you're always going to be running the same version of software. But
no, but just the reason is that so, if you were trying to go through an upgrade and you had new software, you couldn't attach a new node. Right.
So I can come in and I can say, I'm going to bring in, like, say I have some old 5380s sitting there, and there's seven of them or eight of them in a clique. And I want to bring in some new 5400s or 5450s, which are a little bit more powerful and, you know, the latest generation. And the older hardware is getting a little long in the tooth, and it's been running for a couple of years, and the disks are starting to fail, and the CPUs are starting to wear out, and all of those sorts of things are happening. You start to think about, okay, now I have to replace this set of nodes. So I've got to go out and I've got to buy the equivalent of 8 terabytes of user space.
Mm-hmm.
So if it were only 4 nodes per clique, then I would only have to replace 4 nodes of user space at a time. So the argument that I'm trying to make is, or the philosophy that I'm trying to approach this at is, a 4-node clique is about the optimum size, because if you lose, in the unlikely event that you lose a node, you're going to take a 25% hit in performance. And in the time it takes you to replace that node, most users can put up with a 25% hit in performance. Anything less than that, a 33% hit in performance or a 50% hit in performance is significant. But once you get past the 25%, a 12.5% hit in performance,
or 20 and 12.
Right. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean. So there's kind of this diminishing returns as you add nodes to the clique.
Well, depends on your point of view. Diminishing returns means lack of performance impact if a node goes down.
In the unlikely event that a node goes down. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, the whole point is that you're doing this for DRP and a whole bunch of other points, right?
Yeah.
So it's around your...
Definitely. I don't have a single point of failure,
mm-hmm.
right? And so then I get into this discussion with people about, okay, well, if you only had to replace 4 terabytes at a time instead of 8 terabytes at a time, maybe you can spread your cost of doing that.
So you're talking a 2-node clique?
No, I'm talking the maximum number of nodes you can have is 8. If you, instead of having 1 8-node clique, you have 2 4-node cliques.
Okay.
Right? So now I only have to replace 4 terabytes at a time in my floor sweep of my user data. It means you can be down for less time. It means your cost could be less. And it doesn't have that big floor sweep impact that we have to take all 8 terabytes out kind of thing. And so I'm just looking at it from the point of view that so I divide the floor space up and the nodes up into the smallest number of nodes per clique that I can safely get away with, as it were,
mm-hmm.
so that I'm not taking a huge performance hit, then I get the best of both worlds, because when I do have to start thinking about retiring some of the older cliques, I can bring in newer, more powerful cliques and maybe even add additional data space to that as well. So I might, like in the example, a 4-node clique would have 4 terabytes. With the new hardware, you get 4.4, 4.5 terabytes.
Yep.
So you're getting a little bit more disk space because of the increased power of the boxes. And in that case, you'd basically be swapping out either a 4-for-4 or a 3-for-4 kind of scenario. Now, the other thing, the other possibility is that you could have 2-node cliques and 3-node cliques if you're willing to put up with, or you're willing for a significantly smaller charge, having a hot standby node, which is basically a CPU and memory that just sits there and waits for one of the other nodes to go down. But then you've got one of those for each clique, so...
That gets expensive.
It could get expensive, depending on how much you could what kind of a deal you could work out to get that hot standby node just sitting there doing nothing most of the time. But anyway, those are some of the things I've been kind of thinking about, trying to figure out how you can minimize the cost, minimize the impact on the environment, and at the same time, keep the integrity and the environment together so that you're, when you do have a node failure, it's not going to impact the user too significantly.
Well, and also at the same time, it's a two-sided coin. You've got the node failure, the DR, the disaster recovery part, and then there's also just the planning for evolution, which, you know, the last thing, and the reason I was thinking about it is the last thing is you want to maintain is always that floor sweep mentality. Take a big truck and take the existing out and drop new or whatever, but being able to have an evolution in life cycle to the hardware. I mean, ultimately, at certain points, there's just massive changes and things that you don't really have any control over.
Well, I guess from my perspective, this kind of came to light when we were looking at some additional growth in the environment we work on, and we were hitting the top of our range in that we had 7 node cliques, and we were looking at going to 8 node cliques, and once we hit the 8 node cliques, then we'd have to start a new clique.
Mm-hmm.
And the pain of starting a new clique was, well, not only did you have to start a new clique, but you had to buy 3 or 4 nodes, which was going
and
to
getting
be...
into that clique, if you think back to high school, is very difficult.
Yeah.
Sorry. It was getting a little dry, so I just wanted to throw in a little humor. But yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I couldn't get into that clique either. Because clearly I'm a geek.
Yeah.
Anyway, so...
Well, it's a question of, do you start a new clique or do you add one to each of those?
Each of those, and then you top them out, and then the next time you have to go out and buy, then you have to start that new clique. And it's always that challenge of... Do I add another node to my existing cliques, or do I start a new clique?
Mm-hmm.
And in minimizing the impact of each one of those new node arrivals, I mean, okay, some companies can just turn around and say, yeah, floor sweeps is floor sweep, so what? I know I'm going to take the hit. I'm going to spend $8, $10, whatever, $15 million on replacing a whole bunch of terabytes upon terabytes upon terabytes of data. And that's just the way it is, and I'll take that hit every
and I'm okay with that, and I've got a plan, and I'm used to it, and my customers are used to it, and my organization can handle it.
And I kind of think that those kinds of customers are few and far between, because I think everybody nowadays is thinking in terms of, how do I do a couple of things? How do I minimize my costs when I'm bringing in the new hardware and replacing the old hardware? How do I keep my hardware for the longest period of time? And when I'm buying new hardware, when I look at the price curve of a piece of hardware, when it's really new, it's more expensive. As it's getting closer to end of life and there's a newer version of it coming out, it's just like a car, right? The cars are going to be cheaper off the lot when they're last year's model than when they're this year's model. And so trying to time your space allocation with the declining price of that particular older piece of hardware and bringing it into the configuration to optimize the savings that you would have. Still getting new hardware, but getting it at a cheaper price. And
yep.
And
also what functionality is brought in when you do that. So there's a lot of different things. I know back in the PC and laptop days for corporations, they used to have a refresh pattern of a certain number of years, and then ultimately they expanded that for the very reason of what you're talking about. It just starts to get expensive if every year, for every 2 years or 3 years, I can't remember what the number was, you do a complete refresh of your hardware, versus if you could add another 6 months or another year to that, then you're really kicking, you know, truthfully, how much difference has there been to demand of usage of a laptop or a PC at a desk? I mean, I know I'm a bad example because of my new MacBook Pro, but, you know, points to valid.
Yeah, it is still that same discussion that we've had in the past around what we being the general computing population around, is it better to lease or to buy? And do we need an evergreening process that would be cheaper in the long run if we leased everything and then just had this swapping exercise happening every few years? Or is it better to own and then you still have this swapping exercise you have to go through, but how does it best suit the organization to do this? Of course, the flip side on all of this is if you got your data warehouse working perfectly and you had return on investment that was so huge and cost savings in the organization and identified benefits in the organization that completely offset the price of your hardware, and you could prove that with, and the development for that matter, and you could prove that with a few models with data out of your database, out of your data warehouse, then all of this conversation would be moot.
And it still would be short-lived, because ultimately you set a benchmark and then people still want you to try and operate at a higher level of efficiency or productivity or a cost level, lower cost level, or, I mean, ultimately the bar always moves.
Yeah, and I think the point that I was trying to make was, even though we have been successful in demonstrating benefits coming out of the enterprise data warehouse or out of our data warehousing technology, I think we still have some situations where people have a hard time really putting a stake in the ground and saying, this is how much we benefited from this particular improvement or from this particular piece of work that we did. So, anyway, that's all about cliques.
Cliques, and not the ones in high school.
And not the ones in high school, no. but it's certainly even when, as a geek, it's an interesting topic, I guess, is the way to put that.
Which is funny, when you were talking about that, all I could think of was that presentation we were at about Netezza, where you could hot swap the, whatever did you call the...
The units of computing, whatever those things are called. Yeah. The basic element of...
Yeah, the thing that had the hard drive
really close to the hard drive. The computer really
close. I can't believe I can't remember off the top of my head, but it just was, one of the premises was that when those things go down, they had a model because the data lived in multiple different units, like two, and it was swappable and interesting. But ultimately, even then, you had to go to, once you got above a certain size, you had to go to a brand new, bigger box.
Well, yeah, I think their challenge there was the size of the box that you could put the stuff in, right?
Yeah.
And if you got too many things in one box, then you had to go get a bigger box.
Yeah, and then you've got the other kind of approach is the IBM and Oracle one, which is around, parallel matrix computing model where you just add another box and a box and a box and trying to tie it all together and the overhead and like the Oracle rack.
That and rack or, IBM blades or all of those kinds of things where you just slide new pieces in. Well, I mean, that would work well in the Teradata world too, or multi-processing world if we could just easily connect to the BINET, right?
Yes, yeah. That's where I think you're going to see the people like HP with this new method and on a more open platform, making it easier, but ultimately you once again still have to connect it all. So it'll be very interesting to see where it kind of evolves to.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see, you're right.
Yeah, I'm certainly a lot more interested in, as things become more mature, to better understand that offering and its value point and some of its pluses and minuses.
Well, maybe that's another topic for your next coffee cast, is let's do a little research on that whole HP platform and see what we think about it.
Well, we might be able to get ourselves a little discussion with somebody about it.
Yeah, there's an idea.
One last little topic that I wanted to bring up was attention to detail. So for the last 2 weeks, we took over production support on an application. And that was a lot of fun, a little bit of a challenge, certainly a different way of thinking. And I think any organized systems integration company should get involved with doing production support on their own. And I don't mean just that period once it goes into production and then you just kind of sit around and make sure that things are going well, but actually to be primarily responsible and feel the headaches and see the everyday impacts of design and approach and things like that. That's certainly a lot of value, but very interesting
to see. Absolutely. I think that the rubber hits the road when you're doing primary support and little things like commas and semicolons and carriage returns can you hang you up even when you least expect it.
You know, I remember going back to a comment a client once made. A lot of the some of the more simpler things have to do with governance and enforcing a certain governance in design or implementation. And so kind of my second time in as many as 7 months where holding to governance, even in a fairly open standard world, can really kill you. So as an example, there, you know, an XML parsing it, you can have, you know, carriage returns in an XML and it's supposed to be able to handle it. But if for some reason your BEA platform can't handle that and it's a bug in BEA, doesn't right. mean that whoever wrote that XML is wrong, but you can't have a space or a carriage return, otherwise it treats it differently. Or as today's example, in an INI file where a carriage return meant that all the items in an IP address or all the IP addresses after that
were ignored. Yeah.
And, you know, I really appreciate it because the people that had to do the work and were close to it really were working hard to get to that level of attention to detail to be able to figure it out. And, you know, it's kudos to the people, but it certainly showed me that you can't just have people that don't understand an application maintaining it because right. the impact of something that they could do. So you could go and say, you know, we wanted you to move from 5 IP addresses to 20. And when that person went and made those entries, went and said, well, this is fine. I can just do a carriage return and it should be fine to go forward. But not necessarily knowing that that impact and what that could mean in the INI reader. And
you know, yeah, I think you need two things. I think you need the person who's the person who's responsible for it understanding how it works and runs. And you also probably need a fresh pair of eyes to look at it as well. Somebody who's knowledgeable and can say, well, you know, I agree with all this, except why is that extra semicolon in there or something like that? Because we all get complacent in our reviewing of something when we're pretty sure it works. Mm-hmm. We assume that it works, and then when we look at the details, we find that, you know, oh, well, we missed that.
And it's funny,
and that's just human nature.
In the browser world, with so many different versions of browsers and even types of browsers, you can go and think that the code works and it would work in one form, and that hanging semicolon is okay, but in another version of a browser or as things evolve, it no longer is valid. So, you know, kudos to Roman and our fine friend in support, the other person, for being able to have the patience and keep looking at it until it was resolved. I think that's great, and it was certainly fun while it lasted. I'm glad
that... Yeah, we're all glad it's over. We hope it is, anyway.
Yeah, well, it's kind of fun having to do, you know, our first or second instance of doing production support was over a long weekend to boot, mm-hmm. but... So that was that. So that was kind of a fun, some certainly new, interesting learning. That was really the kind of things I was thinking about talking today, just to try and kick us back on. Any other things or thoughts, Graham?
Yeah, it's time to go sailing. It's Wednesday night.
It's Wednesday night. So those of you who are listening will hear this Thursday morning. But thank you, Graham. I appreciate it. And have a great day, everybody. For more information about Project X, please join us on our website at www.pxltd.ca or hop on our blog and join in the conversation at pxltd.typepad.com. This is a copyright of Project X Limited. Thank you for joining us today.